You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Wes Matlock, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks. She had a pet snake. She bought a red guitar.
This episode was produced thanks to our patron, Kathy Ferguson, professor of political theory in Star Trek.
Hello, and welcome to the Mythcreant Podcast. I'm your host, Wes, and with me is...
Oren.
And returning for a third time is our special guest host...
Sarah. Hello.
Hey, welcome back, Sarah.
Thank you.
So today we are talking about describing combat in role-playing games. And we know how thrilling the prospect of combat is... You know, for everybody involved, right? You've got your shiny new weapons. You've got your awesome armor. It's time to describe some amazing actions and succeed.
Yeah, I think last week we definitely spent most of the time talking about how much we really love combat and how great it is.
I mean, yeah.
Although, like, I gotta say, when I first started playing, like, D&D, like looking through the book and like seeing all these different types of swords, I was like, oh, this is so cool. I want to use all of them. Oh, look at this sword. It's got like a spiky bit on the handle. Like, I want to use that one. But like this one's got like a knife coming out of the hilt. I want to use, oh, it's so cool. Look at all these swords. Ah.
It's very important that each one has a, like, is slightly different mechanically.
Yep, oh, yeah. Yep. That's the spycraft model is a whole book of like 40 some odd nearly identical handguns with like these little tiny little finicky differences in their mechanics.
Perfect.
Yeah.
But yeah, describing combat. Okay, well, all right, Wes, so I'll put a scenario before you. If I am a player and it's like you've described that there is like a beholder in front of me.
Okay.
And I'm like, yeah, okay, I roll to hit it with my sword. That's my d20. What do you do? How do you describe to, like, pick up my interest?
Okay, so the situation is there's a beholder, and you are going to attack it with your sword, and I want to try to spice this up for you.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. I think I would probably do a better job of providing a bad example first. Mm-hmm. So Oren states his intent to attack... to attack the beholder, and so I would then ask you, what weapon?
My longsword. Oh. Yeah, longsword. That one does the most damage.
Okay,
longsword.
Okay. But how do you attack it?
What? How do I attack it?
How do you attack it?
I stab it in the eye.
Okay. Like, you know, with brute force, or are you trying to like do this really dexterously?
I could see why this would be a problem.
Right, and it's so, yes, if you for those of you listening, if you're picking up on that, I would not recommend battering your players with questions about how they're conducting their attack, right? That is not something that's productive, because, and I've remember being in this situation myself, a DM or a GM asking me that many questions will make me think that they are very important to the outcome.
Yep.
And that's not the case.
Yeah, they are mechanically identical.
Yeah. If you say, I attack the goblin with the pointy end of my sword, is going to still result in a dice roll, probably. And it'll have the same result as if you said, unsheathed my long sword and I lunged at the goblin in a 180 degree arc, ending with a grin as I watched the blood spill from its face. You know, like,
that's going to be especially awkward if you miss.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And like, this isn't just a problem for like straight D&D combat, right? Like, anytime a game expects you to provide a lot of description, but like provides you with no like mechanical enforcement of that description, your description's going to fade. Like, I don't know if any of you ever played Mage the Ascension, but like in Mage the Ascension, it depends almost entirely on the players to like differentiate the way their magic works from the other players by like describing their, you know, all of the little steps they do to make their spells work. But it's all the same. It all has the same result.
Yeah.
So eventually you're like, you know, at the beginning, you're like, okay, yes, to create a portal, I draw 13 unique runes around the rim of a silver disc and reflect the sun through it. And then by the end, you're just like, yeah, whatever. I stare at the air until a portal appears. It's fine. You know, I've done this like 10 times before, you know.
Okay. Okay, well, that's a good point, Oren. I mean, maybe we need to dial it back a little bit and then say, what is the point of describing combat, right? Sarah, you were Oren. Any immediate thoughts?
I think there's sort of a time and place for really ornate description and for just going through and just saying, I hit with a 20. Okay, you know, good. You do 20 damage. Good job. It feels like when there's more narrative description, it indicates that it's more important. You know, it feels like the really, you know, the finishing blow or when things are really tense, like that's when you want to have more description because that's what it feels like in, you know, movies or books. It's like you want to highlight the really important parts and, you know, get through the less important parts maybe as quickly as possible. Maybe not as quickly as possible. Maybe just get through to the interesting parts.
Yeah, I mean, you want to describe the parts that are dramatically relevant, right? And like when you're engaging combat, typically the first blow and the last blow are dramatically relevant. And all the ones you throw in the middle are like it's not likely unless there's like something really clever about the mechanics that like makes the hits like actually like alter the direction of how the fight is going, right?
Right. Like you talked about in an Apocalypse World game, you could have an entire combat in a single roll or a single description. So you don't necessarily need to have all of the in-between parts to make a functional, exciting combat.
And that's like, you know, that's how I prefer it if I can get it that way. Like, I'm a big fan of one roll resolution for combat, and it's just because I can describe it without getting bored, right? Like, I can come up with a cool description because I only have to do it once.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if we're playing Legend of the Elements and, like, you know, a firebender attacks a waterbender, I can, like, describe how the flames, like, create this hiss of steam and, like, scorches the waterbender's hair and, like, describe the smell and every, and, like, I can do that. But if I have to do that, like, 10 times, I'm like, I run out of steam, right? No pun intended.
No, that makes sense to me, especially, like, if you're... I can see, I mean, there's definitely value in describing the combat, like, you know, as a GM to try to add flavor to big moments and things like that. And if you can get buy-in from your players to describe their own combat, I think that's good too, provided that, like, you know, I'm going to say benefits them, but that it, like, it serves a purpose, right? Like, don't have them describe their combat before you roll, right? Like,
yeah,
why would, if they're going to provide a really excellent description of, you know, how they conjured up this, you know, acid arrow and flung it across the sky and it, you know, buries into whatever, like, and then they miss, you know, they're going to feel cheated. In that case, I would just say, that's an awesome description, it totally happens, and we move on. Right?
Yeah, so like there's a very fine art, and this is the same for like any role, but like in combat in particular, there's a fine art to like figuring out what you can describe before the role and what you can describe after it, right? Like, because like I think like for something like that, like describing the cool conjuring of the acid arrow is like, that's cool, right? And you can, but then you want to stop there because you don't want to describe the actual like throwing of it until you know how that turns out. And like ideally you still like make it sound cool if it was important enough to describe, like even if they don't hit their success threshold, you know, depending on what kind of system you have. If you have a system like Mouse Guard where you can succeed with a complication, you can then be like, yeah, your arrow strikes through and like burns through their armor, but like several drops of it splash onto your skin or something. And even if you're not in that kind of system where it's just like all or nothing, it's like, well, even then you can describe the acid arrow like in its arc and like glinting down on the enemy, and then they like raise their magic shield and it like shatters in this like green rainbow, right? Or something like that. So I mean, like, in general, I try to err on the side of making my players seem cool even when they fail at stuff.
That's good, solid.
Yeah, that's an important mantra for me.
So what do you do in role-playing games that where they actually give you a mechanical reward for describing things? Like, I've seen a couple of role-playing games like that, and you end up having two problems. One, you kind of want to describe all the awesome stuff, and then you might still fail, and then all of that awesome description went nowhere. Or you're trying to do the same thing over and over again because it's super effective, but you then are trying to come up with new ways to describe that same thing in order to get those points.
And it's like the curve slowly increases. Like, man, I remember this is like a problem with Burning Wheel, where like at the end of the session you get like rewards based on like good role playing, but like as you get more, as like in game, several games that I've played, not all of them, but in several games where like we've gotten really into our characters, like the bar for what we need to do to like earn that Artha has gone up. And it's like, it used to be all we needed to do was give like a heartfelt like speech and we would get Artha, but now that's not enough. Now we have to do the whole thing like in character with accents. And it's like, what am I, a theater major? You know, what can... So to actually answer Sarah's question, in general, what I try to do is, like, when I award these bonuses, I'm more liberal with my bonuses than not, just because players like getting bonuses. So, like, I'll usually do my best. But I also, like, I will require that, like, the description has to be different. Like, you know, I'm not gonna... Like, it's just going to get boring if they describe one thing really cool and then they just do that over and over again for the rest of the session with that same description. And then I try even harder for to do the fail with complication mechanics. Like, even if the game doesn't actually include them, I think that they are more important when like the players have like really invested in something they're doing enough to like describe it and like make it sound cool. Right. I think it's, you know, even more important than for the failure, even if it's a failure, to have impact and to like feel that while things may not have gone the way you wanted, they were still cool, as opposed to like, oh, your spell just fizzled out, sorry.
The GM for the campaign I'm currently in has this interesting technique where we do pretty bland descriptions of our normal attacks, but then if you're doing the finishing blow or if you roll very, very poorly, he will say, well, describe how you defeated him, or describe how she, you know, managed to totally wreck you. And that invitation is always great because it's like, ooh, this is a special moment. And sometimes, even when it's not a good moment, it's really fun to get that reward of describing how badly you flubbed up.
Yeah, because it's like the description means more if it's like reflected mechanically. And like, you know, it sounds like that's exactly what this GM is doing, right? Where it's like, well, this was the final blow, so like mechanically this blow is more relevant than all of the others.
Exactly.
Or like you rolled really badly and that's unusual. Like, it's, you know, that's kind of a fluke. And like, I don't know if something extra bad happens to you in this system when you do that.
No, we don't have any critical failures. It's just for fun.
Sure. But either way, it's still like an unusual thing to happen, right? So like that totally makes sense. That's kudos to your GM. That's a good idea.
Yeah. I especially really like the describing when you fail component, right? Because, and if you're, you know, if you're playing with a game that has critical failures, you know, you roll a one or whatever, if you let the player be responsible for describing their own failure, like, that's nice, because I think they'll probably feel of it as less of like a punishment if like the DM or the GM is supposed to dish it out. It's like, you rolled a one, you fall on the ground and all your armor falls off too. You know, like,
yeah,
you feel like you're targeting them. And if you just let it them do that to themselves, like, there's, you know, they get to affect what's going on and contribute to the story in a descriptive way with actual like consequences.
Yeah,
the one word of caution I would put on there is that some players, it is not because they're bad people, but like they take failure hard, and if you ask them to describe their failure, they will at best be kind of sullen about it. At worst, they may even try to use that description to get out of the consequences of a failure. So like, just be aware of who those people are and that they will have much more fun if you as the GM step in and like describe a failure in a way that makes them seem cool. right? Like, you build that trust with them for a while, and then, like, they might be ready to realize that a failure doesn't mean that they are, like, personally bad players who, like, are now, have now been humiliated and, like, had their search histories posted on, you know, public record or whatever. Like, that, you know, so that's just a word of caution. Sarah, were you saying something before I, like, stampeded over you?
Oh, no. Nope. Not at all.
No. Okay. Here's a question for both of you. How, like, graphic do you like your combat descriptions to be?
Graphic in the sense of, like, it gets...
Like, you know, do you want to know, like, do you want your GM to realistically describe to you, like, what an axe does to a person when it, like, contacts their head?
Yeah, okay.
You know, like...
I don't like... I kind of err on maybe a little bit less graphic description. Like, I think it's fine to say, like, you know, like, you sneak up on the guard in the dark and you cut his throat. And mm-hmm. they have imaginations, right? Like, right. They can fill in the gaps, you know. If you start, you know, talking about stuff that would make people think of, like, Game of Thrones' Red Wedding, then I don't know. I don't find it entirely necessary. I don't know what it adds, really. I would rather hear description and provide description that could, like, stimulate imagination instead of just being overly graphic with it, you know? And mm-hmm. that's actually how I prefer to, like, watch, like, shows and media as well. Like, I don't need to, like, for my taste, I don't need to see it in graphic detail. Like, it can be suggested or told, and I will fill in the blanks, you know?
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Yeah, Sarah, same way?
Yeah, I think if the specific element of gore is somehow dramatically interesting or funny, then I think that's okay if it's something to play off of, in the same way that you might describe the way someone... you know, collapses to the ground and their cloak falls over them. Like, if the blood from their neck is, like, streaming in little rivulets or something, you know, something more meaningful than just trying to be graphic, I feel like, then I'm more okay with it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But gross out stuff, I'm not that into.
Yeah, and I usually, like, admittedly, like, I want wounds to feel like they matter.
Yeah.
Because, like, I can get kind of bored if it feels like we're operating on cartoon physics, where it's like, yep, I got, like, smashed in the face with a mace, but, I mean, you know, big deal. I got, like, you know, the Daffy Duck, like, my bill got, like, sent around the wrong way, and then I had to straighten it out. But, like, in general, what I prefer is to describe around the wound, like, rather than describe, like, the meatball mess that's in there, I try to describe, like, the effects of it, of, like, you know, like, the, like, you see, like, blood seeping into the area around the wound, and then, like, they start to go pale and their hands start to shake, mm-hmm. that sort of thing, right? I feel like I found that brings it home a lot better than trying to describe exactly how many kidneys they've lost.
It kind of reminds me of, like, the I actually haven't seen Psycho, but, you know, there's the scene in the shower and you just see, like, mm-hmm. I guess they used Hershey's syrup for the blood because it moved very thick and viscously down.
Yep.
But it's like you cut away from that moment and you just see, like, the edges, and it leaves it to your imagination how bad it is. And mm-hmm. it focuses it more on the relevance to the character and the drama than on, like, the image.
Well, and you're also just, like, being more respectful to, like, your audience or your players, right? People can, you know, fill it in. They don't need, like, your version of events. You know, it's, yeah, and especially just considering, like, yeah, I mean, I'm trauma or even just, like, levels of comfort with this kind of stuff. You know your mm-hmm. know your players and be smart.
Yeah, probably ask also ahead of time. If you're thinking you want to include, like, graphic descriptions, maybe the players would be into that. You know, if everyone's really into graphic horror, then sure. Or if you want to do that, let them know before you inviting players to the game. And if that's something you want to do, make sure they know that's what's coming.
Oren, to your point on describing the wound and making sure that has impact, I'm 100% on board with that. Potential issue, though, would be a player looking at their character sheet and saying, but I still have 50 hit points.
Yeah, that is a problem. It's one of the reasons why I prefer games that have wound penalties. Although, like, wound penalties are their own problem, because, like, if wound penalties exist, it's like, well, I got hit once, and now I'm basically out of action.
Yeah,
so
I broke
my
collarbone.
Gonna go have a nap, I guess. so, yeah, there's definitely some give and take there. It's sort of, you have to decide what level of that, of cartoon violence is right for you. On a similar note, how detailed do you like your combat description? Like, not specifically of, like, the gore, but just, like, you know, like, do you enjoy it when your GM, like, describe, like, the sun glinting off their sword as it flashes down, and, like, the, you know, and like, the crossbars that you have on your sword, like, you know, breaking the armor like they're supposed to, or whatever, right? Or, like, the snow whipping around your face. How deep do you go on this sort of thing?
Sarah?
I guess I find action for the sake of action not particularly interesting. So, you know, some brief flourishes, especially at the beginning or end of combat, I think are great. But I would go back to what we were talking about earlier. I feel like having dramatic moments, things that in the combat that are relevant sort of outside of the combat to the characters involved and to the story. Mm-hmm. I think the descriptions that relate the combat to the effects are things that I find more interesting. Because if you're just using a lot of description, there's not necessarily any reason to pay attention to that. But I haven't mm-hmm. had a lot of GMs who used overly descriptive combat. So, you know, maybe it would actually be pretty interesting if they were good at it.
Yeah, the times when I found where it's occasionally been a problem is a GM who is used to something like Call of Cthulhu, where it's, like, super dependent, or any kind of horror game, really, where it's, like, super dependent on atmosphere, mm-hmm. and then they, like, try to transition into a more action-heavy game. And then they're like, okay, so in the previous game, it was very important that I, like, describe everything in exactly the right way, and now I have to do that for combat. And it's like, hey, you don't really, you don't need to spend that much time on it, you know?
Mm-hmm. As far as my preference, mm-hmm. I think I might offer a word of caution, and mm-hmm. see if I can develop this to where I want it to go. If you are running a game, and you spend a lot of time describing things in a lot of detail, I think that kind of, I mean, subtly or not so subtly, is basically telling your players who's really in charge here, and how much control you have over what's happening. Oren, I can't remember what post it was that you wrote a while ago, but it was really influential, and it was more about...
Oh, well, thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, well, it was. We talked quite a lot about it, my friends and I, my little D&D group, and it was on combat, and it was kind of on turn order. If you guys listened to our podcast last week, we talked a lot about that, but the importance of, like, players feeling comfortable and free to, like, interrupt the GM and provide description for what they mm-hmm. want to do, even, like, out of turn. Like, don't have turns happen, right? If describing the game is something that everybody knows that they can, like, take charge of, I think you'll get better gameplay. A good example that I do remember from the post that you wrote, Oren, was something about how, like, you know, like, an army or a group is, like, charging down a hill. And so I suppose, yeah. like, a GM could, like, stop, roll initiative, and let's carry this out. Or, you know, the wizard sees that and is like, interrupts the description of the army charging down the hill to say that they're going to, like, shape earth and create a pit, like, right in front, off into the distance, you know? Mm-hmm. And, like, describing that action affects the combat. You're not trapped in some kind of static turn order that's determined by rolling for initiative or whatever modifiers you have. And then you're basically sharing the GM reins, right? You're giving control to your players to make it feel like when they provide description, they're actually impacting the game. And you're saying, hey, this is, like, your game too. Like, I'm happy to describe mm-hmm. things, but we all have a more fun time when you describe cool things and they contribute to the story.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was my how to run a stand and deliver combat system.
That was
in which I basically advocated that you throw out the rules and like just, you know, play it and then like, you know, play it by ear. It's a little more complicated than that, but basically. yeah, and like that's like, if you are not using the structured like static turn order system, it is much easier to accommodate players when they have cool ideas like that. Yeah. Right. Because if you're using the structured turn order system and the player has this like cool pit they want to do, it's like, yeah, well, that's cool, but like, it's not your turn yet, man.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, that was an opportunity we all just lost. So I will say that I have had one experience where I did do a lot more detail describing than normal, and in this particular case it paid off, because it was actually a Lord of the Rings game. And so in most games I wouldn't go for this level of description, but like in Lord of the Rings, because so much of Lord of the Rings is based on like wonder and just like the feeling of something being epic,
mm-hmm.
In like the traditional sense of the word, I spent more time like describing the way the sunlight shone off of the armor of these elves that came to oppose them, and the way that the rust patterns on these arrows that they found looked like blood and stuff like that. And I wouldn't normally go that far, but I found that in the, you know, while we were all like agreeing to become part of Tolkien's world, it kind of fit. So there's, you know, a certain amount of like be conscious of what you know, what umbra you're going for, as it were.
Okay, you said epic, and that just made me think of the fantastic combat descriptions in the Iliad, and I want someone to make a like death generator that just randomly recombines like all the different descriptions of how, you know, so and so was pierced through the nipple. Yeah.
A lot of getting crushed by rocks in the Iliad, if I remember correctly.
Yes. but in terms of describing hundreds of deaths, all somewhat unique, I think it did a pretty fair job there.
Yeah, well, that's definitely something that GMs could look into for inspiration. And I mean, like, if you're since we're almost out of time here, I have a last piece of advice. If you are a GM and you want to describe more combat, and you're just, like, not really sure how, I would recommend like seeing if you can find any videos or live performances of like oral storytellers,
mm-hmm.
because that's the sort of thing they do like for a living, right? And like they get very good at it, and they understand like the difference between describing something in the written word and then actually having to say it out loud to a, like, you know, to an audience. So that's, I think that, you know, that's worth looking up. I mean, heck, you can always find them at Ren Fairs, right? They're always around.
And radio plays. You know, I think there are a bunch mm-hmm. of podcasts that are also radio plays that probably have the same kind of benefit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, heck, listening to other people play role-playing games a thing now.
Definitely.
I didn't see that coming. but that's a deal. You can do that if you want. All right. Well, we are out of time for this episode. Thank you both, especially Sarah, for being our guest host once again.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This has been great.
Yes, it's been excellent to have you. We will definitely get you back. For those of you at home, if anything we said piqued your interest, you can contact us at podcast@mythcreants.com. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week.
As your eyes open, a haunting melody fades to silence. Strange symbols circle the floor, and someone lying next to you is dead. Can you put the pieces together before you meet your doom? Find out by playing our standalone RPG, The Voyage, for sale on mythcreants.com. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale, and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he came around. Tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean, and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. Accepted it graciously. Now he visits every weekend with the princess who saved herself.
This has been the Mythgreant Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Colton.